The Life and Legend of Juro Janáček, the Soldier Who Became an Outlaw. Juro Janáček's father, Martin Janáček, lived with his wife and three children in Terchova, where Juro was born in 1688. Their lives were toil and tribulation, struggling as best they could through poverty and misery. They sowed the fields, brought in the harvest. Things were difficult, but life in other domains was even harder. With a change in landlord, a different order began. The tithes were soon raised from 1/30th to 1/10th. Taxes were increased threefold, and people were obliged to work on the landlord's fields from dusk to dawn 5 days a week, leaving only 2 days for their own plots. Realizing this was no life for a human being, Martin left the village, going to a place where he could completely vanish from the landlord's overseers. A little meadow beneath Pupov, high above the village, was a perfect spot. The sun shone all day, and a spring of clear crystal water ran through the meadow. It was especially good for grazing sheep and cows. Martin secretly built a wooden cottage there and waited until the snow thawed to move. Martin labored from dawn to dusk, struggling with the soil and the forest, and built a small farmstead and took care of his family. Since he disappeared from the village, all the landlord's men were searching for him. They announced that if he did not return, he'd be severely punished when caught. One day, news came that an uprising against the emperor had started. All the working people joined in. Martin was too old to help, but Juro, who was already in his 20s, was anxious to participate. He was eager to fight to his last breath so that the serfs could live as human beings at last. When the recruiters came to Terchova, Juro signed up for 7 years and marched off with them along the Va River toward Vienna. Juro fought with his Kuruk army, and just as the serfs were on the verge of winning their battle for a better life, the emperor bribed the Kuruk generals. The generals called for a retreat, and while the army retreated, they were unexpectedly ambushed by the emperor's troops. The generals had run away. Later, the Kuruk army regrouped, and again when the battle was begun, the Kuruk commanders betrayed their forces. The Kuruks fled in disarray. Juro Janáček headed back home to Terchova. When he arrived at a nearby village, he heard crying and bells ringing. Thinking the town was being invaded by the emperor's troops, he rushed to find out what was happening. To his terrible surprise, he found that his mother and father were being buried. He ran to the church, where he learned that the landlord's men had discovered the place where his father was living. His father could not run away because Juro's mother was very ill. They seized his father, and the punishment for not working for the landlord was 100 strokes of the stick while being tied to the rack. Martin died after the 50th stroke. On the same day, his wife died at the cottage. Juro's first thought was revenge. But no, he said, revenge resolves nothing. The world must be different. The world must be fair and just. But how, where, and with whom could he begin this struggle? He did not know the answer, but he felt he could find the answer in the mountains. This is how he began his life as an outlaw. The Life and Legend of Juro Janáček. How Janáček disappeared from sight. Some say that Janáček was able to make himself invisible in another way. They say that Janáček could do something with a cup, and when he turned it upside down in an instant, his pursuers gazed into space as if they had lost their sight. No one could explain it in any way, but they all swore it was quite true, and the guards were not able to do anything against it. And this happened more than once. It happened in the country of Moravia, in the village of Malinovec, in Visosica, near Kiosku, in a tavern in Terchova, as well as in the wine cellar in the square of Zilna. Who knows? Maybe the herbs sown into Janáček's belt caused it. Well, this is how it is said to have happened in Malinovec. Janáček was drinking wine. He was drinking slowly, enjoying himself. Meanwhile, you can be sure that the tavern keeper sent a message to the guards concerning the guest who was visiting his establishment. The guards had hardly crossed the territory of Milinovic when Genocek already knew about it. "Are they coming?" he laughed. "Well, good. They should hurry, but not break their legs." An hour later, there was stamping, uproar, and yelling. The windows shattered, and about 10 rifles pointed into the room, and another 10 guards were standing at the door of the tavern. "Surrender, Genocek!" But Genocek only smiled and slowly drank his wine. Not a pinch of fear could be seen on his face. "Surrender, Genocek!" The guards ventured to take 3 steps into the room. "Surrender, Genocek!" They were already within Genocek's reach. He could have grabbed them, broken their bones, and knocked them through the door. But he did not do anything. He only quietly drank. And when his cup was empty, he simply turned it upside down, set it on the table, and he left. What about the guards? Well, nothing. They just stood there as if carved from wood. Perhaps they would have moved if they could have, but they could not. The same for those who were pointing their rifles at Genocek through the broken window. Genocek just walked away, whistling an outlaw tune. He did not even push the door closed. He was well out of the village, and in fact, already in the forest when he met a boy hurrying to the village. He gave him a ducat and said, "I don't want anything else from you. Only go to the tavern for me. You'll see a cup there standing bottom upwards on the table. Take it and turn it right side up." The scared boy didn't understand, but he would have been glad to do anything for a reward, and at the very moment that the cup was turned, the paralyzed guards began to move again as if they'd woken up from a dream. They didn't search for Genocek at all. They just lined up quickly and marched away from the village. That is said to have happened to Genocek in Milinovic, and similarly in other taverns. When he did not feel like running away or defending himself, all he had to do was to turn a cup upside down. However, exactly what Genocek did with the cup beforehand, one could not say. The life and legend of Juro Genocek. Where did he get his strength? How could he lift a wooden building? Since when was Genocek so strong? From the day he was born, the fairies and the old woman's gifts only served to consolidate his strength. After he was born, when the neighbors saw him for the first time, they agreed that the child must have been descended from the race of giants who lived in the Slovak mountains centuries before. Such children born in those days were a reminder of the past, and when they grew up, they could perform exceptional feats. Juro of the Genoceks would surely be the same, they predicted. When his hair started to grow, they said to his parents, "Don't cut his hair. Only braid it. Enormous strength is hidden in those braids." Later, this was proved to be true many times. Juro Genocek's mother fed him well, and when he was 12, her son was the strongest and tallest of all the boys in all the hamlets in the region. One day, 7 boys set upon him at once and could not get the better of him, although Juro Genocek never picked fights, but he stood up for the weaker boys when he could. Indeed, other boys his age often deserved to have him teach them a lesson. Stefan Ondras, for example. One day, Stefan saw a whistle that Genocek had carved from a spring willow, and it caught his fancy from the first sound. As soon as he heard him play, his heart was filled with joy. "If I could carve such a whistle, I would play a tune too," he thought. "But I'm not able to. I've tried more than once. And to trade for something, what can I offer to Jurgen?" And he could not stop thinking about the whistle, and he could not sleep. His eyes almost popped out when Genocek played it. One day, he decided he would watch for his opportunity and steal the whistle from Genocek. When Genocek went the next day to bring back a stray cow, Stefan quickly grabbed the whistle from his linen bag and hid it under a nearby tree stump. Jurko came back, wanting to cheer up his friend and himself, but the whistle was not there. "Where's my whistle?"
"I don't know.
I just put it in my bag a moment ago, and there's no one here but you."
"Jurko, I don't know," Stefan lied.
"Don't lie to me, Stefan. Tell me where the whistle is." But Stefan Ondras did not confess. His friend could seize him with those strong arms of his and break his bones. He could shake the soul out of him, but he would not say. Juro Genocek decided to take a different approach. He felt that the boy must confess of his own accord. He should understand that he had harmed someone. He must regret and make amends for his error, so he would never lie or steal any more. "Look there!" Genocek called out unexpectedly and pointed at the sky. Stefan looked up to see something. At the same moment, Jerko grabbed Stefan's hat. When he leapt to a nearby hay shed and slap put the hat underneath it. "My hat!" Stefan screamed. "My whistle!" Jerko replied. "My parents will skin me alive if I come back without my hat. And my heart will break if I don't play my whistle." "Well, I don't have it." "Well, neither do I have your hat. You can see that, can't you?" Jerko showed him the empty hands. The cows had to be brought back for milking. The boys separated, running to opposite sides of the pasture. Each one was left with his own thoughts. "A whistle is a really nice thing, but I can't go home without my hat. My folks bought it for me a long ago and paid a whole gold piece." Stefan completed his thinking and made his decision. He slowly went to the other side of the pasture, where his friend was sitting. Jura only smiled and did not say a word. He waited patiently, being sure that Stefan would come. "Jerko, about that whistle." The strong young man didn't say a word even then. "I'll give it back to you, and, Jerko, I promise I'll never do anything like that again." And that's what Janoshek wanted to hear. At once he leapt to the corner of the hayloft, lifted it up a bit, took out the hat, put it on his friend's head. Well, then the other boy ran to the tree stump under which the whistle lay. That same evening at home, Stefan Undras spoke about young Janoshek's show of strength. The next day, the whole community knew about it. And on the third day, the people down in the village as well knew that Janoshek does not have to strain to lift a hayloft by one corner. But the reason why Janoshek hadn't done so, the reason Stefan Undras never mentioned. Janoshek also remained silent. Each time he was asked about it, he only smiled. It was as if he had already set in a notion at the time that his strength was predestined to do other feats. Juro and Jerko are diminutive forms of Juraj. Life and Legend of Juro Janoshek. Valaska and Other Gifts. After Juro Janoshek had taken leave of the fairy, he continued to wander in the mountains. He knew what he wanted, but he still did not know how or with whom to accomplish it. 3 days passed, and he did not meet anyone in the mountains of Kyushe until he came across a shabby cottage. No one lived there except an old woman with a nose like a rook's beak.
"Hello, Mamika! I am hungry and thirsty. Don't yet know where I will sleep," he said to the old woman in a loud voice. "What do you want?" she replied. "Do you want me to put a bowl of dumplings and a bottle of wine in front of you and prepare a bed?" "Oh, I would be ashamed, little mother. I am only asking if there is work to merit all that."
"Of course there is. There's always some work to be done. Look, the wood is not cut. The meadow behind the house needs a scythe. And the roof also needs mending, but I'm not sure if flour for the dumplings can be found in my kitchen."
"Whether it can or not, I'll help you. And for my supper, it will be enough if you give me a taste from yours."
Janoshek attacked the work at once. An hour later the roof was mended. In another hour the meadow was scythed. But when he tried to cut the waiting logs, he did not get on well with any of them. He swung the axe and struck again and again, but the logs did not give way and stood just as before. He turned around and he saw the old woman standing in front of the cottage, looking at him inquisitively. "It must be her," he realized. "She must have put a kind of spell on me. Why should I let myself feel ashamed?" He rallied all his strength, as well as that which the fairies had braided into his hair, and he swung the axe again. The log fell in two pieces. He split the next one as easily as cutting butter with a knife. It was growing dark when he cut the last one, and the old woman invited him to dinner straight away. They sat down at a table with nothing but an assortment of dried herbs on it.
"Well, help yourself, lad," she said.
Janoshek did not say a word. He took the herbs, poured the hot water over them, and drank. He thanked her and began to look around for a bed.
"I'll show you where you sleep. Come on, I'll show you,"
the old woman croaked, and she showed him to the shed with drafts coming in from all sides. And when he entered the shed, he saw that it was filled to the roof with something like moldy hay. He looked around for something to cover himself, but there was nothing to find, so he took a handful of moldy hay and saw that it was nothing but thistles. A voice from somewhere had already whispered to him that something was going on here, that he would only understand it later. For the moment, he had to be patient. So he drew back into a corner, and there, more awake than asleep, he waited the night out. The day was only beginning to dawn, and he was already in the yard.
"Thank you very much,"
he said to the old woman, when he saw that she was certainly not preparing any breakfast. "When I pass by again, I'll drop in and help."
Janáček, wait, he heard when he was at the edge of the forest. He stopped, he came back into the yard and asked, where do you know my name from?
I know many things you don't have any idea about, the old woman replied. I also know what recently happened in Terchova village, and why you are wandering in the mountains.
I know many things you don't have any idea about, the old woman replied. Now, Janáček was sure about what he'd only suspected the night before, but he did not ask her anything, believing that he who asks not will not be deceived. She will tell me what she wants without my asking, he thought, and waited. Indeed, she did. There were many of those determined to do something similar as you yourself are trying to do, said the old woman. But none of them have passed the examination I prepared. You are the first. I wish you will also succeed in what you have undertaken. The old woman touched Janáček opasok, a very wide girdle-like leather belt with several buckles, traditional dress of the time worn by most young men. She opened it a bit with a slice of the knife and put something in it, sewed it closed immediately right on the spot. What is that? You'll know when the moment comes. Janáček did not have time to thank her before she also cut the belt on the other side, put something in it, sewed the hole up again. And what was that? You'll know when the time comes. And all of a sudden, she put a studded hatchet into his hands and said, only a good Velaska belongs in such strong hands. With that, she disappeared in front of his eyes. Janáček called out and looked around in every direction. The question he wanted answered had not been heard. And that's the story of Janáček, the soldier who became an outlaw.